Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest tonight is Nolan Dalla, who is media director of the World Series of Poker. We'll be speaking to Nolan in a few minutes. I enjoy reading the website, richardmunchkin.com, and this past week there's an article that discusses wannabe pros asking successful pros for hot tips on where to play. What was your take on that, Richard?
Well, find it really kind of a rude question. It's sort of like saying, I hear there's a bunch of money laying on the floor to be picked up. Where can I go get some? I used to have a guy who would ask me, how much money did you make this year? I just find those questions rude. I'm sure for you, Bob, you get these questions too, right?
I do. And for the latter question, thanks to Mark Billings a few weeks ago, I now start telling people, on my daily score that it's between 80 and 100,000, and they stop asking questions because it's out of their league. And all I'm saying is it's more than $80 and less than $100,000. And it almost always is, plus or minus, but it's always almost between 80 and 100,000. And that answer stops them from asking. So I like that one.
Well, now, the other thing is if somebody asks you, what are the best games to play at South Point or something? That's information that I guess is on one of the VP free websites that they could look up. But when they ask you things like, what kind of deal do you get from the host and how much cash back? That's a whole nother story, you know? I mean,
yeah, private deals are definitely another story. When people ask me where's the best places to play, I tell them that I play both at South Point and Palms a lot, which is very true. And they have good games at a lot of different denominations. And I have offered to sell where I play for either $5,000 or $10,000, depending on when it was. And I have had a few takers on that, including somebody who had no business asking the question, but they had just hit two Royals and figured they finally were success at video poker, so now they were going to join the big leagues. But they had no clue as to what they were doing. Sometimes quarter players want to know where I play, and the information is absolutely no use to them because I'm playing for significantly higher than quarters. And at table games, you can play for low stakes and high stakes at the same table at the same time. But in video poker, the quarter games are very different than the larger denomination games.
Actually, I addressed that also, that when players ask where's the best place to play, it's going to be completely different for a $5 bettor or a $100 bettor or somebody who plays only card counting games and somebody else who plays carnival games. I mean, everybody's going to have a different answer to that question.
Now, in that same article, you talked about what it would get to have you go play somewhere out of town.
Well, this was actually – you wrote an article a while back about that dinner we had after we had Mark Billings on the show, where he asked you, your article was about a different question that he asked, and mine was about, he said, what is your favorite game to play? And that really kind of ties into what it takes to get me to go play. Your answer was to him very simple, the game with the highest EV. And for me, it's really a lot more complicated than that. Factors that matter to me are, yes, what is the game worth per hour? But also, where is the game? Who's going to be playing it with me? And and what game is it that we're actually going to play. I play many different games in the casino, and some are a lot more fun than others, and that actually would have bearing on whether I would go on a trip or not.
So it would make a difference whether it was in upstate New York in the midwinter versus going to a new casino in Tahiti. That would matter to you?
Yeah, that absolutely.
Funny how that works.
Especially if it was a game in upstate New York in the middle of winter and I was going there to, you know, do some kind of count game where I was playing it by myself. Yeah, it would have to be worth an awful lot of money per hour to get me to go play that.
A count game where you would have to do it by yourself is almost always what I do. I mean, video poker is usually a solitary game, and you're always counting of some sort. The counting and card games and video poker penalty cards aren't quite the same thing, but they are.
Right. No, you're right. Right. And I think that a lot of just sort of finding happiness, not just as a gambler, but just as a person, involves finding what makes you happy. And obviously you're happy, you know, playing alone, and I really prefer to play with others.
Very good.
I think that's why you've written a lot more than I have. You've got 10 books. I've got one. I'm not good at sitting home alone typing, you know.
Now, good. So let's change subjects a little bit. I got a note from a player named Brian who practices on both Wynn Poker and Video Poker for Winners and wonders how close his accuracy rate practicing at home is to what he actually achieves in the casino. It clearly varies by player, but I'm suspecting the accuracy in the casino is significantly worse than what you experience at home. However pretty your wife is, she's probably looked about the same as she did yesterday, but the way they get new cocktail waitresses all the time, there's a whole parade of them, and there's all kinds of things that can distract you in the casino, whether you indulge in the drinks or not. Now, analyzing your accuracy rate on the software, my personal thought is if you're playing less than 99.9% accuracy, you're wasting your time in the casino. And once you get that high, then you should not even be checking your accuracy anymore, but you should be playing the hard hands or the advanced hands so you get a practice on the finer points. Now, there's a considerable number of players who either do not have the motivation to get to that level or the capability to get to that level, and so they have to make up their own rules as to what is the right level for them. But you need to play pretty close to that. The casinos have a game set out today that a player like me has a small edge, playing as best as I know how. And if you're going to get a small edge or an edge at all, you got to be at that level or you're going to have a negative edge. So that's just the fact of life.
You know, this same thing applies in blackjack. You know, your edge is very small. It's bigger than for you at video poker, but it's still a small edge, and you have to play, you know, perfectly. And there are even more distractions, I think, at the blackjack table than at the video poker game.
There's social interaction in table games that you normally don't have in video poker.
Yeah, exactly. Although I'm sure you must have hosts coming over to you periodically or whatever in the at video poker. But at blackjack. What I did in the beginning, because I had doubts when I first started counting cards because I kept losing, I had friends who were on the team who would come with me and sit at the table in the casino with me to make sure that I was, you know, playing correctly and betting correctly. And I think that's really the only way to do it, because, as you said, what you do at home on the kitchen table may not be what's going on when you're in the casino. So if you have people that can come out with you and do that, you know, it's definitely worthwhile to get them to come do it.
I agree. All right, let's talk to Nolan Dalla. Nolan Dalla is a poker player and a writer. His book, One of a Kind, The Rise and Fall of Stewie Kid Unger, the World's Greatest Poker Player, should be must reading for all gambling enthusiasts. Dalla is here tonight in his capacity as media director of the World Series of Poker, and as he has for the last 2 years about this time, will talk to us tonight about the upcoming World Series, which is starting about 1 month from now. Nolan Dalla, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you very much. It's a great pleasure to be here. I guess the last time I was here about a year ago today, and to be back with the notorious Munchkin and the legendary Bob Dancer, what a great pleasure it is.
All right. We keep changing co-hosts whenever you show up, so I'm hoping I can keep this one for a while. Yeah, quit scaring away my co-host, Nolan.
What can I say? Yeah, for sure. I think you're the one scaring him away.
Let's go on. The World Series of Poker has been a Las Vegas institution for several decades, but now it's growing worldwide brand as well. Where else can players win official World Series bracelets to help them pass Phil Hellmuth's current total of 13?
Well, you know, you really nailed it there with your comment about the World Series of Poker. People that are listening to my voice now here in Las Vegas probably are aware that the World Series of Poker began in 1970 down at Binion's Horseshoe. And essentially for 34 years, it was the grand institution of downtown Las Vegas for many years. Many of the names that we know in this town that became legends, whether it was Doyle Brunson or Amarillo Slim or Puggy Pearson or Johnny Moss, I mean, those are really, by and large, players from another era. And the new era of poker began essentially in 2004 with the demise or the closure of the old Binion's Horseshoe and the taking over of the World Series of Poker by Harrah's Entertainment, which, of course, is now Caesars Entertainment. And as you mentioned, Bob, the World Series of Poker has gone international with events over in Europe. We've been in Great Britain, also in France. And for the first time this year, we just last month came out of Australia for the first time.
Aren't there events in Asia as well?
Yes, Asia. We call it WSOP Europe. That's the one that's in the fall, and then the event that we just began for the first time in 2013, we call it WSOP Asia. Well, I mean, there's not that many actually casinos in Asia other than Macau, and you know, you could go around the map, and it's actually the Asian market is not as saturated with casinos as the West is, or certainly as North America is. So we went to the Crown Casino in Melbourne, Australia. I guess technically, I don't know if that's Asia, but anyway, that's what we call it. And by and large, a lot of poker players, I should say, did come from Malaysia, Indonesia, the Philippines, Japan, China, Korea. You know, I mean, so it is WSOP Asia, but to be quite more precise, it's Australia.
Has this created a controversy that some bracelets, are there players who don't think they should be giving bracelets at those events? And
no, Rich, that's a good question. It's controversy in my view as a media director, controversy is always good because it means people are talking about you. And it means also that people are passionate about one side or the other. And very, very quickly, we get into this discussion about is it better to, well, for the World Series of Poker, quality versus quantity. We've had fields of 8,700 players. 8,700 players. We've also had, back in the old days, fields of 25, 30 players. I'm talking about in the 1970s.
Well, even last year, you had a bracelet with 48 people in it or something.
That's right. And that was of course, they put up $1 million for that one. That's, that's why we only had 48. But
I was a little short.
Well, most of us were short. But, you know, that again, the point of the matter is that I assure you that anyone who wins a gold bracelet, whether he or she beats out 100 players or 1,000 or 1,500 or 3,000, I assure you that they covet it all the same.
Now, are you at all? I mean, do you travel 24 months of the year? I mean, do you have to be in Asia and Europe and at every one of these events?
Yeah, I really do feel sometimes like, you know, when people say, where do you live? I always say, what's my hotel, number this trip? And I do travel around. We have what's called, very quickly, Richard, we have the World Series of Poker Circuit, which we started almost nine years ago. And what this means is the World Series of Poker is an institution here in Las Vegas held annually. But we realize the great magnetism of this event by going in and taking it on the road to casinos around the United States and really North America. And we go to places like, well, San Diego, Lake Tahoe, Atlantic City, Florida, Oklahoma, Vancouver, and I could just name in, 20 more. venues that we visit. But I'm on the road with a great many of those. And again, the reason we have the World Series of Poker circuit is most of these events cost $300 to enter versus, you know, $5,000 or $10,000 at the World Series in Las Vegas. So it's really, I don't want to call it the minor leagues. That seems to diminish it. But I don't think there's anything wrong with having a farm system for poker players, introducing players to big time poker at their local casino.
But they get bracelets for it.
They get gold rings.
They get gold rings.
It's all jewelry. It's all gold. It's all good. We call it first the our this is our slogan, and I think it's actually apropos here. First the ring, then the bracelet. And what that means is, come to say you live in Dallas, okay? A lot of 6-7 million people live in the Dallas area, right? Well, they don't have any casinos in Texas or in Dallas, certainly. Well, you go to Choctaw, Oklahoma, which is, I think, about a 75-mile drive from North Dallas, and you can be sitting there playing poker in essentially an hour and a half. So those events sell out in Oklahoma. And for players, I'm using this as just a typical example. They go, they play a World Series of Poker circuit event, compete for a gold ring, and obviously the great genius of this is that eventually they want to come to Las Vegas and play in the World Series of Poker.
Now, we talked about the $1 million entry fee last year. It was called the Big One for one drop, and $111,111 went to the charity, which is dedicated to providing clean drinking water around the world. Now, you're not having the big one again this year, but you're holding a couple of other ones in a similar vein.
Yes, as you say, Bob, the those who may have watched this, and if you didn't watch it, try to catch one of the reruns of ESPN's broadcast of what was called the Big One for One Drop in 2013, won by the magician, as he's known, which is Antonio Esfandiari. $18 million for first place. Again, $18 million first place. It was just a magnetic moment in poker history. I don't, you know, I've been around this game for a long time, and more years than I care to admit, but I must say I was just electrified watching that moment. And we can't have that every year because it has to be special. It's kind of like maybe the Olympics every 4 years, or the World Cup in soccer or European football every 4 years. Presidential politics, would you want that every year? No, of course not. So we have this once every, you know, few years, hopefully. And this year we decided to do what's called the Little One for One Drop. And the cost of this, instead of $1 million, is $1,111, and I think 11 cents. So the idea behind is the one, the unity of one behind one drop, and obviously going to the charity of clean drinking water.
Are you having a media event this year?
Didn't
it get canceled last
year?
I
knew you were going to throw me a curveball, Richard. Did you try to play? Were you trying to sneak in last year?
I would have if there had been an event, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
When we heard you were coming, we canceled it. No, actually, here's what happened real quick. No, we did not have one for the first time in as many years as I can remember, which is going back 20 years. And the problem is we just had too many events. The media was actually too busy covering a lot of events. We're going to make up for it this year. We're going to have a heck of a media event. You're invited, okay? You can play this year.
Great.
I don't know about Bob, though.
Well, if I'm going to have a chance, we have to keep Munchkin out. good. Well, actually, my only World Series of Poker history is the media event, and I want a headset because it was a bounty, and I knocked Seth out, I think, and so I've scored in every World Series of Poker event that I've entered. Now, during last year's finals, players started playing dreadfully slow on every hand. The TV was unwatchable. Lots of people complained about that. Has anything been done so that this doesn't happen again this year?
Well, you've really brought up a topic that's being debated at the very highest levels, meaning World Series of Poker. I assume the other tours or televised poker tours also are deliberating about this. The players themselves have very passionate opinions. Most top pros, I'm sure you've had, you know, some on your show.
Daniel Negreanu.
Yes, and Daniel is one of the most. He's really leading the charge in this. And by the way, I think that most people that I talk to are on his side. I mean, we agree that just it's gotten ridiculous, and players showboating and taking too much time, and you know, careful deliberation is one thing, but to abuse this, well, you're quite right. It makes for lousy television. Not that that's the most important thing, but it's
important.
But
it is important. And so your answer seems to be that nothing's being done about it.
No, not yet. But here's what I'm seeing happen. I think we're getting close to. I'm going to really test your age now. If you recall back in the 1950s, whatever it was, but with basketball and the shot clock. You remember the old 1950s, you'd have basketball games 38-33, that kind of thing, and they dribble out the clock. Well, you know, basketball saw that you had to speed up the game somehow, and now that, you know, the NBA or certainly college basketball, very watchable because of the shot clock. I mean, that was a big component. And I think we're going to need something like the shot clock, and I'm not sure what that's going to encompass, but I think it's coming. And is it coming this year to this year's World Series of Poker? Listen, the World Series of Poker has been around 43 years. We don't rush and experiment and just throw things up and hope they stick. That's not the way we do things. We like to test it. We like to research it. We like to see if there's a consensus of unanimity as to a change. Let's say a shot clock or a shot. I don't know what you call it. A timer. What do you set out like a little cooking timer? I don't know. Maybe that's the solution. But what I'm saying to both you gentlemen is we have to do something about it, and something will ultimately get done.
Is this stalling because the slower they play, they figure players will get knocked out on other tables?
I think it depends on the situation, Richard. It's you have some people that are doing it for exactly that. You do have some people that are, I'm not going to use a curse word. Can I say anal on the air?
Yes.
Sure.
All right. Well, I just said it. I think some people, they play every psychological angle they can at the table. And if they know by deliberately getting under the skin of their eight opponents at the table, I mean, it's a vicious game sometimes. They're playing for big stakes. Don't get me wrong. I understand it's a serious game. But some players will use every single psychological advantage. And if you or I or whatever we're playing and you're taking all this time and now people are getting restless and angry, well, they're not concentrating now. So that player, that jerk, thinks, and maybe he does, have an advantage. That's why some people are doing it.
I think there's another reason, too, where sometimes you do need a minute and a half to think things through. And sometimes you know instantly what you're going to do. But if you always take a minute and a half, then your opponents don't know whether or not this is one of the times you need to be thinking or not.
Well, we ran into this problem in backgammon tournaments too, and you know, where players just were incredibly slow, and you know, in backgammon tournaments now they put a clock on people. I mean, they had to.
Yeah, real quick, a sidebar story. I talked. There's a fellow named Tom Schneider. He won the World Series of Poker Player of the Year, I think, in 2007, six, seven years ago. I talked to him on the phone a few days ago, and he told me about he was playing the 10,000 main event last year, and he told me about a player at his table that, you know, whenever you deal the cards out, you go, you know, you go nine-handed, whatever, and the player would not even look at his cards until it was his turn.
That's appropriate play.
Yes, it is, but I think it's poor etiquette. I think it's just poor etiquette to basically take, and then he would, of course, wait the 90 seconds before making a decision. Again, if you add up all that time, is he within the letter of the law? Yes, he is.
It's appropriate etiquette. Play to not, you can't give away any information about your hands if you haven't seen your cards yet. So why should you give players who acting before you? That's one of the advantages of position, isn't it?
No, fair enough. And again, I don't think anybody is having a problem here, Bob, with a taking time on a big decision. And I understand what you're saying. You want to camouflage which are the big decisions. But I mean, come on, 90 seconds. Imagine if we had 90 seconds of dead air right now. You know, we're not going to do it, but I'm looking at the clock. Count 90 seconds and tell me if you could just imagine sitting there, not this hand, but the next hand and the next hand and the next hand. You'd go crazy.
Yes, it makes it unwatchable TV. Speaking of nine hands or ten hands, most of the games are about that size. But now you have eight-handed games, and you have six-handed games, and you have four-handed games, and you have two-handed games. Now, I can see how a two-handed game is different than a nine-handed game. But is there that much difference between nine-handed and eight-handed and six-handed and four-handed?
Remarkably, the answer is yes. And this gets to one of our new events this year you're speaking of, I'm sure, is the four-handed no-limit hold'em. Again, and people are thinking, what's the difference? Regular table of nine players versus eight players. We have six-handed hold'em, which has been standard for about seven, eight, 9 years. I mean, it's become because of online poker. six-handed hold'em is really quite popular. And then there's what's called heads-up poker, as you say, which is two-handed poker, heads-up poker, right? Well, four-handed is being tried this year. And believe it or not, it's very difficult to tell non-poker players what are the differences. They are indeed very subtle. But the major difference is that the blinds race around considerably faster when there are less players. So you can't just sit there and what I call camp and wait. You can't sit there and wait for pocket aces when there are less players. When there's an eight-handed table, nine-handed table, the blinds are not – it doesn't cost you a dime to play a hand. You may see six, seven hands before you pay the blinds again. So you could sit there and wait. When it's heads up, it's just the opposite. You're posting a blind. In other words, it's costing you money to play or tournament chips to play every single hand. I'll tell you what, anybody that's passive in that situation is not playing much. That's a dead seat. That person has no shot. So what, basically, here's the idea. The idea behind shorter-handed play, six-handed, four-handed, heads up, the term is force the action. It forces the action. You cannot sit around and wait for good hands. You've occasionally got to play a jack four. You've occasionally got to push with a 10-3. You know, you can't wait for pocket aces, pocket kings. You will not win if you do that.
You have a blog, NolanDalla.com. Now, about a month ago, Munchkin came across an article where you were trying to raise $120,000 in less than 24 hours and in a city that wasn't your hometown, and you did it. And so anyway, that was one of the articles you read. So what else, what other kind of articles would we see on NolanDalla.com?
Well, I appreciate the shout-out on the website, and I know Munchkin's read it as well. And here's my thing is Las Vegas is a very interesting, colorful city. You guys have been here for a while. You know that. You run into a lot of interesting characters. And the great thing about your radio show or say, myself writing a blog or what we do, it's nice to give some life to those stories, to those people we meet, to those encounters we have. I mean, this stuff needs to get out there. And my thing, I've always been interested in history and recording events. I think that's important. I think it's important to give a voice to what happens, to the things we see and the things we do, and also to the opinions we have. We're a real quick sidebar on that. I've got very strong opinions, whether they're politics, whether they're restaurants, whether it's poker. And listen,
movies,
everything. And by the way, I have so many people that disagree with me. I mean, it's absurd. I get into violent arguments with people. And you know what? As soon as our discussion's over, or sometimes during our discussion, I'm shaking their hand and we're having a drink together. I think discussion's good. I think argument's good. I think controversy's good. I think getting things off your chest is good. And that's what my blog's about, getting things off your chest and into the public consciousness.
Well, the articles that I particularly like, and I mentioned this to you, are the ones that involve gambling. So, you know, you had another one about golfing with Phil Ivey, and he was calling somebody on the phone to make $10,000 bets on the hole or something. What was that story?
Well, real quick, I was playing golf with Phil Ivey. This was a few years ago, and I guess at one time I had some money, and I don't have it anymore. I don't make as much as I used to, so I guess I'm very middle class, if not, you know, depends on how football season. Sometimes lower middle class, but I can't gamble $10,000 a hole is what I'm trying to say, right? So Phil is just as competitive betting, you know, $20 a hole or 100. He doesn't, you know, it wasn't the stakes. He wanted to win, right? So you know, we were betting 20, 50 hole, whatever it was, but that still wasn't enough juice for him. So he was walking down the middle of the fairway, and I just overheard this. He wasn't doing this to impress anybody, but we were coming up on another tee box, and he calls someone else and says, "You know, we're playing a par." He just calls it out. This is a, I'm just going to make this up, 517 yard par five, dog leg to the right. You want to bet 10,000 that I think the 5.5 would be the over under. You know, in other words, I bogey it or worse, I lose, I par. I think he pars it, and he holds out. You know, five, gets a par. Whips out the phone. This is the greatest story. Whips out the phone, calls back and says, "You owe me 10 grand, whatever. I forgot the number, but something like that. You owe me $10,000. The person on the other end of the line did not ask for any verification. Didn't say, "Put Nolan on the phone. Give me some proof that you really parred this." It was the gambler's word. His word was taken at faith. Can you imagine that? And by the way, would you guys like to go play golf with me sometime?
It would never happen in the business world, I'll tell you that.
No, it wouldn't.
You have you've had women's only events at the World Series for a while, and somehow a couple of years ago, men started thinking, hey, that'd be cool to play in the women's event.
Devils.
So it was, generally speaking, an unpopular move. So, but legally they were entitled to it. So you came up with a solution to that this year, maybe.
Well, that's a good point. Maybe we haven't tried it. I think it's just ingenious. It's just so neat. And by the way, the real quick background on this, ladies and gentlemen listening to my voice now, who among you out there listening to me now is not for more women playing poker? I'm assuming we have some women out there listening. A lot of men. Wouldn't it be nice to have more women playing poker or in our community? Do we agree with
Absolutely.
That?
Absolutely.
All right. I like more women in the community, definitely.
All right. Well, one way to do that is to make it friendly for them, to entice them in some way to come in, you know, in an environment and atmosphere where they can enjoy themselves. One of those ways we do that at the World Series of Poker is to have what's called a women's only event. By the way, it's the Women's World Championship, by the way. 1,000 buy-in, you're the ladies' champion for the year. Pretty big deal. Talk about Miss America, she doesn't get what the ladies' champion at the World Series gets, which is, you know, some real bragging rights and some serious money. No bikini contest either.
Miss America gets some bragging rights.
I guess she does. But, you know, but it's superfluous. It really is. What is she going to, real quick sidebar, what is she going to answer? What is her view on world peace? I mean, is that seriously? You call that, is that skill? Seriously? Bob, come on.
I don't know what the questions are, but every now and then it becomes controversy. And
let me just say, it's a joke, okay? It's a beauty contest. It's a joke. If you're into that, okay, fine, whatever. I'm just suggesting to you that somebody that wins and beats out 1,500 ladies and is the Women's World Championship, she can hold her head up high, as she rightfully should, because she's
a
ladies'
bracelet.
Champion. She does indeed.
All right, but guys entered it.
Oh, yeah, sorry. That was the original question. So here's the deal. We had some jerks, about a dozen a few years ago.
You didn't like them, I guess.
I mean, what kind of a guy would do that? Who? Seriously, what
well, a guy
kind
who wanted
person?
To hang out with ladies.
No,
it?
That's not what it was about. And by the way, I heard some of them say they were going to donate if they won, or sorry, if they cashed, they were going to donate money to breast cancer research, or whatever. Okay, I'll give those guys some props. All right, fine. I'm just saying men were perceiving this as a soft field. They were chauvinistically crashing the party, coming in and thinking, I'm going to beat up a bunch of women. By the way, except for one time, we've never had a man go deep. No nuances there. I see you smiling, yeah. Bob. I see you smiling. Don't say it. All right, so here's what we decided to do at Caesars. We said we've got to do something to dissuade male participation. So we made it a $10,000 buy-in. $10,000.
That's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money for everybody. But you know what? Here's the caveat. If you're a lady, and you can prove it.
Wait. What? You can prove it?
Well, I don't know. You can show your ID. I think it does say your. Does it say sex on your license?
It
I think
does
so.
in Nevada.
All right. Well, good.
But I don't know that the DMV tests completely.
All right. Well, let's not split hairs here. All right. So here's the deal. So if you're a female, you get a 90% discount. It costs you $1,000 to enter. If you're a man, $10,000. You want to play, you want to pony up 10 times as much money, go ahead. Be my guest, gentlemen.
Now, I assume that the men got in because they said that this was discrimination and you had to allow them in. But does that work? I mean, is that allowable to
Richard, here's
the
situation. No, that's a fair question, and I'm just going to level with you. You know the culture, the corporate culture we live in now. Attorneys run the show. Everything we do now is vetted through a legal office, and essentially, and they're probably right to do this. Caesar's a legal office doesn't want, you know, they don't want some kind of a test case made against gender equality and competitions. I mean, this could be a test case. We don't need that. That's not good for the series. Not good for Las Vegas. Not good for Caesars. Okay, so
and not
you know,
good for poker.
No, not really good. I said controversy is always good. I don't know if it's good in that case. We don't want to be in the courtrooms. That's not where poker should be played.
Does the same thing happen to enter seniors tournaments? I don't really see the difference.
Surprisingly not. But we do have the capacity or the ability to. Turn someone away based on age. I'm not sure why that is, but again, I'm not an attorney. But for whatever reason, we can.
Doesn't sound that much different, does it?
It wouldn't seem to be.
Now you have a millionaire event in this year's World Series, which is somehow different than the other events. tell us about that, please.
Yes, we have what's called the Millionaire Maker, I believe. It's very early in the schedule. By the way, the World Series of Poker starts in, oh my goodness,
less than five weeks.
5 weeks away, right.
What is the beginning date?
May 29. May 29th is the doors open. That means you can start registering. The first event, I think, is the following day, May 30th. That being said, a few days into that, I forgot the exact day. Maybe it's May 31st or perhaps June 1st. We have something called the Millionaire Maker. We are guaranteeing $1 million prize for first place.
For what kind of entry?
It's a $1,500 buy-in, no limit hold-in tournament. So for $1,500, somebody will win $1 million for a – by the way, this is fairly standard for $10,000 buy-in events. Has never been done before for – and $1,500, depending on you're listening to my voice out there, that's a lot of people. That's a lot of money to some people in this town. It's really not a lot of money in the poker economy. When you can satellite your way in for say $150, meaning you win a satellite, you get in for somebody could satellite their way in for $150, and essentially walk away 4 or 5 days later a millionaire. That will happen probably.
And. So normally on a $1,500 buy-in, what would first prize be?
Well, we have had fields, Bob, that have been in the past, $5,000, $6,000. I mean, we've had some very, very large prizes. But usually those, we're paying like 600-700 people. I mean, they go mm-hmm. very, very deep. So first prize is only, you put that word in italics, right, is only like $600,000, $650,000, something in that range.
Well, but how is this event different than the $1,500 No Limit Hold'em event?
This is
a bracelet event,
you're
right?
It's really not any different, except what we do is we have more starting days. We essentially will start with not just one or two days, but I think there's multiple days where you essentially have what's called flights, where you'll play the session on – you can play the Tuesday session, the Thursday, you have three or four – I think four flights. I'm sorry, I don't have the schedule in front of me. But you play multiple – you can play multiple flights. You can re-enter. You can play one. You can play all four. I mean, whatever you want. And then essentially we're going to wind this down till there's – one. That's how you get a $1 million prize pool, by the way.
Well, but you also – second prize – we'll get more in a regular $1,500 than you will
for sure.
Here.
Yeah, you can finish second. There's no shame in winning about, say $550 somewhere in there. Third place is probably $425,000, and then, $350,000. And, you make the final table, you're going to make $70,000-$80,000. I mean, pretty sweet.
But, they're taking this money out of the prize pool.
Oh, yes.
So there's lower prices lower down.
Well, yes, and keep in mind that, don't get me wrong, everyone that we will pay the standard 10% of the field. And when they use the word, this is a tricky word in poker, not just the World Series of Poker, but all tournaments. When you see the word guaranteed, well, yes, the casino must guarantee it. Let's just say for the sake of argument, and by the way, this is probably a bad thing I'm about to say. Let's suppose you had a natural disaster, or you had some kind of a, I don't want to bring up Boston, but let's suppose you have something that's like that, it happens somewhere.
A tsunami.
I probably shouldn't bring this up. I'm just saying that, I'm not saying it'll happen at the World Series, but inevitably, probably in one of these events, you could have something like that happen. So when you come up with what's called a guarantee, what if only 400 people show up? It's not going to happen, okay? We're going to have 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 people. But I'm just suggesting to you that eventually, like they have some events down in like Jacksonville, Florida, where they'll have a $500,000 guarantee. Well, what if in Jacksonville they only get 312 people show up? I'm just saying the word guarantee is very tricky, and it does put the casino at some risk.
That's true. There are some slot tournaments where they're guaranteed certain amounts, where it's a free roll part of it.
And then you're all over that as an overlay, yes?
Yes, but of course,
yeah, but
the more people overlay.
With the World Series, the risk here is like
zero.
Beyond minuscule. I mean,
you're right. No. Again, these are corporate decisions, and we weigh everything. Okay, it's not as though we don't take into account what we expect the numbers to be. We're going to meet the guarantee. Okay, and by the way, but what I'm suggesting to you is that's a sweet marketing tool to be able to say somebody in this room when they walk in is going to walk away a millionaire.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of them will, but of course they started millionaires. The you're holding turbo events this year. What is a turbo event?
That was a nice segue. You just scratch a cymbal on the drums when you did that. Da-ding! You know, that Da-ding. Was really good. And now I got to answer a serious question.
You do.
After you just totally like...
What is turbo?
A turbo
sounds
event.
Like an energy drink.
It is an energy. You need energy drinks to play a turbo event. What that means is this, real quick. It means we accelerate the structure. Some people don't want to sit there for 3 or 4 days and play an hour long rounds, and you know it's a you know it, it, it here's you know what the best the most important skill in poker is the following word, patience. Well, turbo does not reward patience because it's a much quicker tournament. You've got to play poker, you've got to play hands, and we accelerate the structure, meaning the blinds are this, the blinds are that. They're moving up much more fast, and it's a what's called a 2-day event. And so it'll end very, very relatively quickly for poker, and we call this, that's what we call it, a turbo.
Very good. This has been interesting. We're going to do some commercials now, and I'm sure Munchkin has some more questions to ask you if we have time at the end. So if you can stick around, we'll make sure you have some more to say.
Thank you, Bob.
That was interesting. Third annual visit, and the way he's going, it's going to be fourth. We're going to be calling on his door. South Point has more than 10,000 video poker games, returning more than 99%. That's more than anybody else. During the month of April, every Sunday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, you get a free swipe if you earn 200 points. Swipes can range from 2,500 points, which is worth $7.50, through $20 or $50 in free play, including a possible 2x points on midnight of the day swiped. Although the swipes are random, historically they're not equal weighted. So if you get big mailers, your swipes tend to be the $20 or $50 free play. If you get very small mailers, you might get free breakfast buffet. It's still a good return on a $200 investment where you're playing a game where you have the advantage anyway. But it's a better if you play enough to get big mailers, you'll get bigger swipes on average. Double point days in April every Monday, which we have one more of them this month, midnight to midnight, no limit. At the Palms, Friday and Saturday night drawings this in April, which we have one more weekend. It's called the $80,000 cash and free slot play drawing. Each night, each of the two nights, 10 winners will receive money and slot play of equal amounts, ranging from 300 and 300 up to 1,000 and 1,000. Drawings are held at 8 p.m. and are based on virtual entries earned since 8 p.m. the previous Saturday. Friday and Saturday nights, between 8 and midnight, you earn 3x drawing entry. The Monday, Wednesday, Friday PEW, standing for Play, Earn, and Win, for last half of the month, are going to be perfumes, Tide Pods, which we Munchkin learned for the first time last week what a Tide Pod was. It's laundry detergent, in case Nolan has no idea what I'm talking about. And you can redeem your earned points anytime during the week. So tomorrow, Friday, if you've played Monday and Wednesday and you have not redeemed your points yet, all the points can be redeemed on Friday. The high limit slot room has moved. It's now next to the promotion center. It appears to be mostly the same games. The machines I play, which are the Ultimate X, are still there in the same pay schedules. And I have not checked all of the other machines, primarily it's because I don't play them. At videopoker.com, the free monthly contest for now through the end of the month features Super Times Pay Poker. When you play in the monthly tournaments, pick the highest variance game. You're playing 100 hands, and so you want to have the best chance to score in 100 hands, and so the highest variance as possible. You don't really care how much you lose. It's just 100 hands, it's over, and you can play again if you want to. Now, in the regular casino, Super Times Pay uses the exact same strategy as regular video poker. It's you pay 6 coins a line rather than 5, and every 15 hands or so, you get a random multiplier between 2x and 10x, And it comes out to be the average return is about 0.25% higher than the base game for no change in strategy. Most of the month they have daily tournaments as well. And the next one will be May 1st, which is after the monthly tournament is over. Next week, we have attorney I. Nelson Rose. Rose is a specialist in gaming law. And with the new internet casinos being contemplated all across the country, you can bet that that's going to be a large part of our conversation next week. In 2 weeks, we're going to have two separate guests. One works for United Gaming, a company who runs the Gambler's Bonus program at a lot of bars around town that are limited to 15 machines. And it's a totally different world than regular casinos. We're also going to be talking to Reno Ron. It's a man with a pseudonym who he's played video poker in Reno for years, and he's going to talk to us about the best games to play in the Reno, Carson City, Lake Tahoe general area at all levels from quarters up to high denominations. So that's what's coming up. All right, Munchkin, you had some more questions for Nolan. He, for some reason, did not leave the room, so sock it to him.
Well, one thing I'm really interested in is you used to work for the government, for the U.S. State Department, and I'm wondering how you went from that to poker.
Well, that's I'm still it's been 20 years. I'm still wondering the same thing. It is an odd connection. Real quick, Howard Stutz from the Las Vegas Review-Journal did a story on me about a year ago. I'm not sure why he would have picked me for a story, but somehow I guess he was dry on material and featured me one time. But he made an observation that, you know, when we all look back in our lives and the decisions we made and the forks in the road that we came to, you have to make decisions about what you do, what do you enjoy. And, I work for the State Department, as you say, and was overseas. I was in Eastern Europe when Nicolae Ceaușescu fell in Romania. I was at the American Embassy. I had a very exciting life, and I had a lot of great experiences. That being said, I don't know if I would have wanted to spend, you know, the next 25, 30 years living, you know, overseas or necessarily living in Washington. And very, very quickly, what happened that really changed my life was in 1993, Atlantic City legalized poker. A lot of people may not remember that when casinos opened in 76 or 7.
78, I think.
78, excuse me, at Resorts International, the first casino that opened. It was all table games and slots, and there was no live poker for, the first, 15 years or whatever. So in 1993, New Jersey finally, a very strict state when it came to regulation, allowed live poker, and I started going up there on weekends, and oh, my goodness, the games were fantastic. It was mostly seven-card stud back in the 90s, and very, very quickly I discovered, obviously, a love and passion for the game. And one thing about the State Department or working for the government is you don't make that much money, and it was a very exciting time and very important people you're around. But it doesn't, you know, Washington's a very expensive city, and going to Atlantic City changed my life in the sense of the games were great, made a lot of money, eventually decided to make a career change, and here I am 20 years later with no regrets.
When you initially made the career change, did you start playing poker professionally?
Well, yes, but when I say professionally, I'd rather use the term semi-professionally. Those of us who write about the game or involved in the game professionally, I like to look at it as something that I do part-time, because I think if I did it for 45, 50 hours a week, whatever, some of these players, they play 70, 80 hours a week, I think I'd be burned out. I don't think it would be interesting or fun anymore. And I think if you do anything too much, it becomes boring. Even if you're good at it, it becomes boring. And I never wanted that to happen to me. So that's the cool thing about the World Series of Poker. It comes once a year, the one in Las Vegas, I mean, for 6 weeks, and I'm so charged up about it. If it was going on around the whole year, it wouldn't be the same thing. Same thing with playing poker. When I go out and play, I feel energy, I feel excited. But it's, again, because I put limitations on what I do. And then, of course, as you gentlemen well know, you're versed in other things as well. I think that we all have different sides to our personality that we need to explore, whether it's with our families, whether it's our writing, whether it's our faith, whether it's business, whether it's our hobbies. I think that all of us needs to explore every single facet of our individuality, and poker is just one part of me.
So how much do you play now, and what's your game, and what kind of stakes do you play?
I don't play. I used to play fairly high. I was always a cash game player. I don't like tournaments. That's going to sound crazy. I work for the World Series of Poker. I don't like tournaments. But the reason is I don't like being forced to sit there for 12 hours where I can't get up and leave. I don't want to just have to, you know, if I'm running well, I want to be able to, you know, to go. And I'm kind of a hit and run. I'll play 3 or 4 hours and leave, and unless the game's really great, right? But I've played just about everything. Pot Limit Omaha is the game I enjoy most. You don't find a lot of PLO here. You find it in the South a lot. I play a lot in New Orleans and the South and Florida, Europe when I'm over there. I mean, I do love PLO. Obviously, it's an action game because you get 4 cards instead of 2. There's a lot more, in my view, a lot more complexity to that game. But, you know, I think you ask any poker player that's serious, it's hard to – when you say what's your favorite game, my favorite game is where I'm having a good time. Doesn't mean necessarily winning. Sometimes I've lost money and said I had a great time, great experience. I learned something.
No, I completely get that.
Yeah.
I completely get that.
So it's not all about just, you know, the biggest score you made is the biggest or the best. That's not always the case.
Do you have to be a player to be good at being a media director?
Oh, really? I think so. I think it's good to have in our organization a little of both. You know, I know nothing about business. If you ask me to balance do accounting work or work in the cage or do things that are like that, I would be horrific. I'd be out of a job in one day, you know. So, I mean, we all have talents and skills, and I think that somebody that does what I do, say, understanding the history of the World Series of Poker, going back to the Binion's Horseshoe days, which I have that advantage because I used to work for Binion's Horseshoe. So I have this long legacy of seeing the game change over the last decade and longer and having seen it matured and growed. So it's kind of like your child in a way. When you saw, if you have children, you know, you see the child grow from 2, 3, 4 and up to a teenager. And I think when you see the development of the child, or say in this case poker, you appreciate it so much more. You don't just walk in and they're an adult. No, I was there when it was a child, you know, and I take a great amount of pride in that.
Currently, the announcers for the World Series, Lon McCarron and Norman Chad, are excellent at what they do. Now, you have a gift of gab and could do that should you want to. Do you see any inclination to change careers and move into on that side of behind the microphone?
Well, I guess it depends on how many zeros are on the check, you know, Bob. I mean, they always say, is it for sale? And, everything in the world is for sale, right? I guess you've asked a serious question, and my view is that Lon McCarron and
Norman
Chad, thank you, doing a wonderful job. They've been the face of the World Series of Poker on ESPN for now 10 years. This will be their 10th year, and they do a remarkable job. I think they give viewers the serious quality that we're looking for, and also some
And Mike Sexton on a competing brand does a good job.
Absolutely, I'm such a fan of Mike and the job he does at the WPT, and there's other shows too. But that being said, I like what I do, and I've always liked being behind the scenes. I like doing things. I don't think you have to necessarily be out in front and be recognized. In fact, sometimes you ask people that are in front of the camera, it can be a curse.
All right, we got 1 minute left. We see you periodically making the news when you're announcing a start of event and you pretend you're a wrestler announcer and you you go all out and make outrageous statements and a grand opening, and that must be a lot of fun.
is there a question? That's a question.
The question is, can you answer it in 20 seconds?
I can, come on, man. This was going so darn well for 58 and a half minutes, and you're going to throw me that curveball at the end? Seriously, come on, Bob Dancer.
All right, I apologize, I guess. Right. I would like to, after off the air, would like to get the answer to that. All right. So
I'm not sure what the question was.
That
was awful.
I apologize, and with apologies, I hope everybody has lots of royal flushes. Good night, everybody. It's been a lot of fun.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com. and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.